At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Okay, so the presents have been opened, the stockings are unstuffed, and maybe it's time to go out for a bite to eat, or a movie, or some eggnog, which means someone out there is probably going to be working for you on Christmas. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson in for Kai Rizdahl. It's the Marketplace Podcast for Tuesday, the 25th of December. So I'll start off by wishing you a Merry Christmas, even if you're one of the many Americans who had to go to work today. From emergency workers to highway patrollers to doctors, there are a lot of jobs that have to be staffed on Christmas. But in 2012, it's not just those essential needs that require workers. As Marketplace's Eve Tro reports, many Americans are working today because, in a way, we want them to.
If you're not working today, thank President Ulysses S. Grant. He made Christmas a federal holiday in 1870, and thus also made anyone working on Christmas an object of sympathy. I felt awful for the barista at Starbucks this morning. He told me it's not so bad. Time and a half pay, and his shift ended at 11 a.m. But a few big chains are getting flack, namely McDonald's, for pushing franchises to open today with no policy for extra holiday pay. Most major retailers, including Walmart, are closed. Of course, some industries work every holiday. Hospitals, police, airlines. George Hobica at Airfare Watchdog says the flight crews he knows don't mind.
They actually enjoy working on the holidays, don't want to be with their families to begin with, and they love the double time.
And there are some very high-paid workers clocking hours today in the NBA. Christmas basketball has become a huge tradition. It's all over ABC and ESPN.
Christmas Day brings five gifts for you and yours to unwrap throughout the day from the NBA's workshop.
That means full-staff ticketing, concessions, and parking. The holidays are full of special events in general with so many people off work. Tim Bomba was out at the crack of dawn testing a course for a marathon that runs tomorrow.
Just to make sure all of our sign markers are in place, that there's no unusual debris on the course.
And working on Christmas can be a gift of service. In New Hope, Pennsylvania, Cricket Lancaster answered a last-minute plea. She's filling in on the graveyard shift at a hotel.
I knew that I was going to get some good stories out of it. I also, it makes me feel good. You know, when I got here, like, three different people upon meeting me just, oh my gosh, you saved Christmas. Thank you so much.
You saved Christmas. Not something I'm likely to hear as a journalist working today. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Well, one business that I almost guarantee you will be open today is your local movie theater. It's become a new American tradition to head to the cinema on Christmas Day. But Hollywood has already unwrapped its present this year. And inside the box is record revenue for the movie industry. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
After two disappointing years, ticket revenue in 2012 has been up by nearly 6%. At Hollywood.com, box office analyst Paul DeGarabedian points out that happened largely without an increase in admission prices, which is how the industry had been forced to prop up profits. This year, DeGarabedian says the studios have turned out a product that audiences have liked.
Movies like The Avengers.
Smash.
The Dark Knight Rises.
Takes a little time to get back in the swing of things.
Skyfall.
Everybody needs a hobby.
So what's yours?
Resurrection.
The Hunger Games.
They just want a good show. That's all they want.
The Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 2.
They're coming for us.
The Amazing Spider-Man.
Extraordinary. How did you come up with this?
Brave.
I want a spell that changes my fate.
Ted.
Okay, all right, so that's where we'll draw the line.
There were so many big hits this year, and that has just goosed us to this, you know, incredible expected $10.8 billion at the North American box office.
But hold on. Cut. Wasn't this also the year of the expensive blockbuster flop? Movies like John Carter and that sinking battleship?
Got it, sir. On my camera.
What is it?
I don't know.
Tell you what, boys. This is a head stomper.
Actually, DeGarabedian says it's what makes this year all the more successful.
The winners outweighed the flops. This year, there weren't as many, let's say, as last year when we had a pretty low attendance figure for 2011.
He says the signs point to continued success with two big openers today, Django Unchained and Les Miserables.
It's definitely a time of growth and a time of lots of movie going, and that's good news for Hollywood.
Where are you off to?
I'm going on an adventure!
Which reminds me, I have a date tonight to go see The Hobbit. In Hollywood, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Wall Street was closed today, but that won't stop us. Details when we do the numbers. I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, but there is 1 week left until we go over the fiscal cliff of spending cuts and tax increases, and pretty much nothing has happened since last Friday when President Obama said this.
Everybody's got to give a little bit in a sensible way. We move forward together or we don't move forward at all.
So is there any forward movement going on in Washington? Well, let's just check in on C-SPAN and see what's happening in the House of Representatives. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's James Taylor singing at the National Press Club. But anyway, we've got 7 days left. I guess we'll see what happens. So before the fiscal cliff became the big story in Washington, there was an election and the birth of this thing called a Super Political Action Committee, a super PAC. And here to talk about that and the influence it has had on our politics is Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer in our Washington Bureau. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, Jeremy.
Well, perhaps nobody represents the year of the super PAC more than Sheldon Adelson, this casino billionaire. So how much did he give altogether?
Yeah, he gave more than anybody else, Jeremy. He and his wife, Miriam, spent about $93 million on the 2012 election. Yeah, in support of various Republican candidates. But some of the groups that these super donors contributed to don't actually have to disclose their donors. So Adelson, in fact, had pledged to spend as much as $150 million in 2012. We'll never know how much he and these other big donors gave because some of their money went to groups that don't actually have to disclose.
But the bottom line is they supported a lot of candidates and causes that did not do very well in the election. So not a great rate of return, it seems like.
The biggest donors contributed toward Republican candidates. That's true. So in that respect, no, they didn't have a very good rate of return. Adelson, for example, gave money directly to 9 candidates. Only one of them won.
Huh.
The Adelsons gave $30 million to Restore Our Future, the super PAC that supported Mitt Romney. And for a lot of these big donors, they did not do very well.
Well, Nancy, I guess the big concern when these super PACs came about was that they were here to stay and that this was the new way of doing business in Washington. And my question to you is, if Adelson and others were not as successful as they thought they would be, will they come back for more next time around?
Yes, they will. no matter how much money they lost on the deal, Adelson, for his part, says, yeah, he's going to be back. He says he's a gambling man. He owns casinos, after all. That's how he's made his money.
Yep.
He says he doesn't cry when he loses because there's always a new hand coming up. And that seems to be the big donors' philosophy with politics. I talked about the Adelsons and other big donors with Sheila Krumholt. She's the executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics, and they keep track of all this campaign spending, and they've been following Adelson's spending very closely.
You know, he said that he would spend, you know, as much or more again next time. So he apparently doesn't care whether people think of this as a foolish investment or, frankly, whether they think he's trying to buy an election.
And Adelson and these other big donors certainly are not limiting themselves to just backing or opposing candidates, Jeremy. They're also interested in issues. Adelson is especially interested in the various ballot initiatives and legislation on organized labor, including the new law in Michigan that bans mandatory union payments, what supporters call right-to-work legislation. Of course, Adelson owns the only non-union casino on the Vegas Strip, so he has a vested interest in that.
So it sounds like we're going to be hearing more from these wealthy donors in the years ahead.
Oh, yes. Most certainly we will. The money is not going anywhere in 2012. You know, the interesting thing is, Sheila Krumholtz was telling me, you know, you can't buy an election, or at least you couldn't in 2012. She says voters were very aware of the money that these mega donors were spending, and they really didn't like it. The big donors will be back, but the voters are hopefully still going to be paying attention and maybe being a little bit resentful of all this money being thrown around.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that in this election cycle, it wasn't the ads by the super PACs or anyone, but the little viral videos like the 47% comment that ended up attracting the most attention.
Yeah, exactly. And those viral videos don't cost anything. You don't have to spend anything to get them up on YouTube.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer in Washington for us. Thanks, Nancy, and Happy New Year.
You're welcome. You too.
One of the biggest challenges to our long-term economic future right now is the cost of our health care. It's hard to spend less on something when the consequences are quite literally life and death. But Sweden has taken a bunch of steps to cut health care costs. More than 90% of doctors there use electronic records. Patients can easily access their personal health information anywhere in the country. And the Swedish government gives entrepreneurs a lot of support to pilot new medical technology. Oh, and by the way, Sweden has one of the oldest populations and highest life expectancies in the world. From Sweden, Caitlin Carroll reports.
Stefan von Rump moved from Silicon Valley to Sweden a few years ago and brought along his giraffe. Whoa, not that kind of giraffe. This giraffe is a robot on wheels, about the height of your average man, with a tall steel pole for a body and a large video monitor for a head. Hello.
Okay. So here you are. Here you have the giraffe.
As the giraffe rolls up to me, I can see von Rump's face on the video screen, and he can see into the room I'm sitting in. He's just down the hall, but because he's operating the robot with his laptop, he could be anywhere. And that's the point.
They can get out their laptops and just go make what's known in Swedish care as a tillsyn, which literally means to view. In other words, a looking-in visit.
That makes it easier for caregivers to be in more places at one time. Devices like the giraffe are expensive, as much as a couple thousand dollars apiece, but they can also help bring down costs by reducing hospital admissions and delaying expensive nursing home stays, allowing people to live in their own homes longer.
It can postpone the transition from the home to the nursing home, where the cost of care more than doubles or can even triple.
Von Rump developed the giraffe in Silicon Valley. Sweden's robot Dalen Lab asked him to bring it here. The lab's part of a $500 million effort by the Swedish government to improve care for people 65 and older. Robot Dalen recruits entrepreneurs like von Rump, and they come because they can get their products to the market more quickly.
We are here in elderly homes in countries around Europe. We are doing that today, and there is no way that a company, certainly a company of our size, a startup company, could be doing that in the U.S. today.
Here's why. Medicare and the FDA won't approve new gadgets without a lot of research showing results. And results from check-ins and preventative care are difficult to measure. That makes investors shy away. Europe streamlines the process. Stefanos Xenios is professor of healthcare management at Stanford University.
It's easier to recruit patients and physicians to participate in studies and collaborate with early stage companies. It's also easier to navigate the regulatory environment in Europe.
But Sweden has its obstacles too. Some nurses and social workers are afraid the robots may steal their jobs. Others simply don't want to learn how to work the new gadgetry. With a little help from Von Rump, I tried operating the giraffe myself.
So go straight ahead, and then you're going to turn right past that wall. Most people oversteer the first time. Kind of wobble back.
And we're in, and we're in. And so now you're moving the giraffe around was actually easier than I expected. I liked it. Maybe it will be available in the U.S. by the time I'm a senior citizen. Investor of Sweden, I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
Coming up, consumerism and Christmas through the eyes of an American living overseas.
At first, I missed it. I missed the deals. I missed the offers. I missed all the cool stuff. But I find myself wanting a lot less things.
But first, let's do the numbers. Wall Street was closed today for the holiday, but it is Christmas, so here are some other numbers for you. 12, that's the number of days this holiday season when internet shopping topped $1 billion. Last year, there were only 10 by this point, according to ComScore. The National Christmas Tree Association says we bought around 30 million trees this year, and they were grown for an average of 7 years and cost about $35 on average. 9.5 million fake trees were bought and set their owners back about $70 a piece. And as we head into tomorrow, which is going to be one of the busiest travel days of the year, this number from the airlines, 42 million passengers are expected to fly during the holidays. That is down by 300,000 from last year.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday. Boxing Day is observed in the United Kingdom, Canada, and other countries. Many folks there have the day off. Tropic of Cancer author Henry Miller was born on tomorrow's date in 1891. And on December 26, 1973, The Exorcist was released in theaters. Fond memories there. A rental suggestion for the holidays. I'm Michelle Philippi.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Jeremy Hobson. In Japan, if there's a business, chances are pretty good that it is a family business. Think Toyota or Suzuki. And for generations, sons have taken on the top jobs when dads step aside. But what happens if there is not a male heir to inherit the business? Well, as the BBC's Mariko Oi found out, some families just adopt one, a fully grown adult male.
Welcome to our hotel. Nice to meet you. I'm the Zengoro Hoshi, 46th generation.
This hot spring hotel on the west coast of Japan was founded by a Buddhist monk in 718 AD. For 46 generations, the hotel and his name have been passed down from father to son.
Hoshi Zengoro というのは
The name Zengoro Hoshi is very important to us. From the day I was born, I grew up here, and many people told me that one day I'd take over the business. I always thought that running this hotel was what I was meant to do.
But here in Japan, only a son can legally pass on the family name. So does that mean that you've always had a son for 46 generations?
No, not at all. When there were only daughters, we'd adopt a son-in-law. In fact, my father married into the Hoshi family and was adopted. There have been several adoptions over the generations.
More than 90% of Japanese companies are considered family businesses. Toyota Cars is run by Mr. Akio Toyoda, the grandson of the founder. Then there's the motorbike company Suzuki, the camera maker Canon, and soy sauce firm Kikkoman. And amazingly, 30,000 of these family concerns have been around for more than 100 years.
In Japan, we value the family business much more than in other countries.
Yasuaki Kinoshita works at Nissei Asset Management, which invests in Japanese companies, both family and non-family.
Family business run by son-in-law, in many cases, that's much better than family business run by their own sons. The founder has many choices to pick up the best one for the new management as the husband of their own daughters.
Today, more than 80,000 adult men get adopted each year to take over the family business and change their surnames. And now the ancient tradition has moved into the modern times by going online. I'm looking at a website now which is for women trying to find a husband who's willing to be legally adopted by his wife's family. Here's one woman, drop-dead gorgeous, but she's insisting her future husband has an accountancy qualification. The matchmaking site was started 5 years ago by Chieko Date.
People laughed at me when I began. They said there'd be no demand. But as the economy deteriorated, it became more difficult for men to climb the corporate ladder, and they began to look for other opportunities to use their business skills. But it's a lot tougher than arranging normal marriages.
Tsunemaru Tanaka signed up last November after losing his business to his ex-wife.
I don't have a problem changing my family name because I see it like a nickname given by the government for the family registry. If there's a chance for me to inherit a family business and make it successful, then that would be best for everyone.
Back at the 1300-year-old Hoshi Hotel, the family is taking time out from business to pray. Zengoro Hoshi is in his 70s. Soon, he'll want to pass the hotel on to the 47th generation. Now, father and son pray for their business to continue its success and for the name Zengoro Hoshi to live on for many more generations. In Japan, I'm the BBC's Mariko Oi for Marketplace.
Well, this is the first Christmas I've ever spent in Los Angeles, and I have to admit palm trees and hummingbirds aren't exactly what I'm used to at this time of year. But the spirit is still the same because the holiday season in America is pretty standard no matter where you are. For example, this scene at Target probably could have taken place anywhere. Gotta get those discounts. Go outside the country, though, and things are a little different, which brings us to the latest installment of our ongoing series, What's Up Europe?
What's up?
What's up?
What's up, Europe?
Today we welcome back a What's Up Europe regular, Matt Smith, an American who is living in Edinburgh, Scotland. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Jimmy. How's it going?
Good. Well, it's nice to have you back, and we haven't had you on in a while. So first of all, just remind us how long you have been living in Scotland.
I actually just passed my first year mark, so this December 1st was my year here, so I've been gone from the United States about a year now.
Well, as we get to Christmas this year, how are things different? I mean, do people shop the same way there that they do here as we head into the holidays?
It's a little different, I think. I mean, a lot of folk here are kind of holding off for bargains. I mean, I think people here aren't as consumer-oriented as in the States. I mean, we don't have the Black Friday. After Black Friday, when I was in the office, people were laughing. They're like, what is this? These people are in line for what? And I had to explain to them, because I worked retail when I was in school, and I was explaining to them what people were doing, and they were just absolutely mortified by the fact that somebody would stand in line and try to do something and to try to buy a television for really cheap. They don't get that here.
Do you miss any of that stuff?
I have to say, at first I missed it. I missed the deals, I missed the offers, I missed all the cool stuff, but I find myself wanting a lot less things. We moved last year and I thought, well, we'd buy a whole bunch of new Christmas stuff and put up all kinds of stuff in the house, and we just decided, screw that, we're just going to go buy a puppy. So we bought a puppy instead, and you just kind of change. It's just a different vibe, I think.
And instead of a ham, of course, you have to have a haggis, right?
You know, in a lot of traditional homes, yes, that happens. But my in-laws, no way. They don't bother.
What are people talking about, or what will they be talking about over Christmas dinner?
It's kind of funny. I mean, here people are always whinging about the weather. They're always complaining about the weather here. But the floods have been really awful this year. It's been really tough. My wife and I were actually down south getting the dog, and on the way back, you're noticing a lot of flooding, a lot of areas, a lot of the roads have been closed off. So it's been kind of tough. So there may be some people in Wales and England that may not have family being able to get to them because of roads being closed down. So it's a little bit of a nightmare.
Now, you know, you're not in a country that is really at the center of the debt crisis, but you're nearby a lot of them. So is that coming up in conversation? Are people talking about all of the economic troubles in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, people talk about it. I mean, there's always a discussion. People here like to think things out. They like to talk about it openly. It's not like in America where we're getting almost in fights and fist fights over politics. Here, it's, you know, people talk about things and dinner, and it's you have completely different viewpoints, and people will discuss it. Of course, there's always the independence thing here, but we've also got, you know, there's now talks of the UK leaving the EU.
Right.
So those things, you know, people talk about, and it's on in the back of their head. But, you know, it's kind of, you know, keep calm and carry on, and people just continue to move on. And you know, most people realize here it's kind of out of their control.
So anything you miss about being in the U.S. for Christmas?
I do. I actually miss, because I'm originally from Ohio, and I really miss a real proper snow. Here, when it snows, it's really dusty, and it doesn't really stick. So when you get it, it's great. But I miss the sun, too. So needless to say, when you have the forecasts of rain and the long hours of darkness, it kind of feels like, you know, I'm Bill Murray waking up in the hotel on Groundhog Day, and all I need is, you know, Sonny and Cher singing I Got You, Babe. So,
and you managed to bring the conversation back to the weather.
Yeah, exactly. I'm now fitting in. I'm
you're a
I'm
true Scot here. Matt Smith in Edinburgh, Scotland. Thank you so much, and Merry Christmas.
Yeah, thanks. Merry Christmas, Jeremy.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today on the proverbial lump of coal that went out to Netflix subscribers. The company had a big outage last night and this morning, causing problems for viewers across the U.S. and Latin America. Netflix is blaming the cloud, Amazon's cloud to be specific. Let's just hope anyone who was watching Trading Places made it to this part before the outage.
I bet you thought I'd forgotten your Christmas bonus. There you are.
$5. Maybe I'll go to the movies by myself.
Half of it is from me.
It'd be a shame to miss that kind of generosity on Christmas, you know? Oh, actually, I'm being told Netflix doesn't even stream that movie, so I think we're good. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media on Christmas Day 2012. Thanks to Sean Bowditch, Mary Dew, and Justin Ho on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by Rod Abid. I'm Jeremy Hobson. From all of us here at Marketplace, Merry Christmas. Hope you can join us again tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.